All right, this is December 3rd, 1984. I'm William Jones, and I'm interviewing Helene Cady. And we are in the audiovisual studio, Morehead State University. And I guess we should start first with maybe a summary of your present family situation, your family background as a child, and when you arrived in Morehead, from where, and so on.
Okay. I live alone, and that's because my husband died in 1966. And our three children, instead of staying here where they should, took off to different parts. So Judy lives in Palo Alto, California, and John lives in Worcester, Vermont, and Paul lives in Minneapolis. But this was not my original home. It was the children's original home. But Harry had come here in the 30s to teach, and I came to Morehead in the 40s. And we went together for about a year before we were married. And that sort of takes care of that part. But I was reared in saying I am a first-generation American because both of my parents emigrated from Sweden. Mm-hmm. They didn't know one another there. My mother came from the northern part, obviously both of them from very poor, poor families. Mm-hmm. My father came from an area about an hour south of Stockholm. Mm-hmm. And life was wonderful for them, compared to what it was over in Sweden.
Yeah. So they had a limited educational background, I suppose, too.
Well, when I visited in Sweden, they assured me that maybe they had the equivalent of third grade because a teacher would come and stay maybe 3 months and then move on to another area. Mm-hmm. And so they had nothing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And as I understand, my uncle came here in 1891, and my father in 1893. So my uncle sort of knew the language and knew the ropes. But when I visited my father's home in Sweden, I could understand the poverty. There were no jobs. There wouldn't have been enough food.
Mm-hmm.
And there they had that patriarchal system, you know, where the eldest son.
Sure.
Is the inheritor, right? So my dad and my uncle then came here and learned a trade, and that was the cement business.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm not sure about the historical facts, but they set up a cement business in St. Peter, which really turned out to be a wonderful thing for the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was born in the house that my father and uncle had built as a business venture and rented out until our family, I was the fourth in the line. And so in 1910, they moved into this, my family moved into this large mm-hmm. house where I was born. But by that time, my father and uncle not only owned a business and each had a home, but they each had cars.
Mm. So they were really the upper crust of St. Peter by that time.
Well, I didn't realize that ever, though.
No.
I thought that we were poor, mm-hmm. but I realized that in the eyes of the people in Sweden, they were indeed well-to-do.
Very well-to-do, yeah. Now they insisted that you have more education, obviously.
Took it for granted.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, now that I am an adult, I marvel that my father thought that five of his kids could go through college and saw that we did.
That's remarkable.
Expense to us because we graduated debt-free. Mm-hmm. My dad took care of it, feeling that by so doing, if he left anything in property, that wasn't important, but to have educated each of us.
Mm-hmm. That's a vision that a lot of immigrant parents had, obviously.
It amazes me. Yeah. Just amazes me.
And where did you go to school?
Well, I went to Gustavus, of course, because that was right in St. Peter, and as each of us
did. And lots of good Swedes there.
Oh, yes, lots of good Swedes. Though we never used the Swedish language in my home, unfortunately.
Is that right? So you never learned the language?
No. Mm-hmm. Not until I went to Sweden, and then mm-hmm. none of my relatives my age spoke English, so I learned Swedish in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Did you spend quite a little time in Sweden?
I spent a month, 5 weeks the first time I went. Mm-hmm. And then the second time I went, then there was no problem because I had taken Swedish here at Morehead State.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. so now I write to them in Swedish and they write to me in Swedish.
Had you always been interested in languages? I know you taught language.
Yes.
You taught Latin, basically.
I think I had been, though I think that's accidental. I fell into Latin because one of my best friend's mother was a major in Greek and Latin. Mm-hmm. And Doris was taking it, and I thought, well, if she does, I might as well, too. And then I really, truly liked it, so I kept on with it.
So you majored in classics then, did you?
Mm-hmm. 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 And public school music, Bill, which might interest you.
Yes. Well. Had you taught before you came to Morehead?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I taught. See, my eldest brother taught at Roosevelt High in Minneapolis, and then my sister taught also, who was older than I. So that was sort of a natural thing for me to do, and I taught at Sabika, which is right out of Wadena.
Mm-hmm.
Then got a better job at St. James, where it was primarily Latin. That's why they were interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I came here in the middle of the year from Warren, where I had not been very long. Mm-hmm. But the Latin teacher here resigned, and Mr. Reinertsen picked me up. So I mm-hmm. came in January.
Mm-hmm. That was January of when, though?
1940.
And you continued in the Morehead system until you retired then?
Oh, but you know, when I was here, you couldn't teach if you were married.
Oh, and when you got married, then you had to leave the teaching
I
profession.
I had to leave the teaching profession, yeah. So then I didn't teach again until the Latin teacher got mumps, and they couldn't find a replacement, so they came and asked me if I would sub. And then she'd only had 2 years of Latin ever. So when she found there was a sub, she requested that she not teach Latin. Mm-hmm. And then I taught 1 hour a day. I got $75 a month for that.
Oh, my.
That was, I think, in 1960.
Well, even in 1960, that's not exactly a munificent sort of stipend.
My husband said to me, don't you think it's sort of stupid tying yourself down 5 days a week to teach 1 hour?
Mm-hmm.
But I did like teaching, and you got the cream of the crop, actually,
sure.
in class.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a challenge. And then in 1963, I went back full-time.
Mm-hmm.
And taught then until I retired in 75.
In 75. So mm-hmm. you had 12 years of full-time
That's
teaching.
Right.
And you taught Latin.
And English.
And English. Uh-huh. Okay.
But the latter years, I taught straight Latin.
You know,
the enrollment was so that I would have usually 125 kids a day in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
So then I no longer had any English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's think a little bit about your first position. In the first place, had you always thought you were going to be a teacher?
I really wanted to be a nurse.
Oh, really?
And that would have meant that I would have to go to Minneapolis for nurses' training. My mother did not like that idea because she thought that nurses got too many of the dirty jobs, scrubbing and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the third place, I would have had to wait a year between the end of high school and the beginning of nursing because I was too young. You had to be 18.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents said, well, go to college in that year and then think. Well, they were wise because, of course, after I'd made friends for a whole year, I didn't want to leave.
Yeah, yeah. Can you remember where you lived and how you got the job and just how you felt when you first started?
It's like as though it were yesterday, because I was on a choir tour when this vacancy came, and that was 1931, so that was the Depression. Mm-hmm. Very few people were getting jobs, mm-hmm. but I had left my resume at home, and also I had left the letter that it was suggested that we follow in making application. So my sister actually wrote my letter of application, mm-hmm. and I remember very well, I thought that if you were going to be well prepared, I ought to go early. So I went 3 days early.
All the way up to Sabika.
Oh, huh? It was terrible. There were no other teachers in town. I was sick from loneliness, absolutely physically ill. And then that first day of class, I had students who were equally as old as I, because they hadn't had a continuous education, and I taught American history, modern history, ancient history, social studies, all of the music from first through high school, and girls' phi ed.
Versatile.
No Latin.
No Latin. Of course, in those days, it's a small school, I'm sure.
It was a small school, yeah. But there was a Latin teacher.
Oh, there was.
But she'd had 2 years of Latin also at Concordia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the next year we swapped. She took one of my subjects, very likely modern history, and I took her Latin mm-hmm. because she felt unqualified.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That first school, what size school, and what were the size of your classes?
The classes were relatively large, 25 and 30 mm-hmm. to a class. And we were in two buildings, and so you just ran outside regardless of what the weather was like. You didn't have time to get a wrap or anything. Just ran from one. The high school building was concrete blocks, I remember. But the classrooms were large and very light, sunny, and they were always in constant use. Mm-hmm. The assembly, if you had a vacant period any time, you always were in the assembly hall. And I can remember that, of course, I had to have all sorts of musical events because PTAs, anything that went on in town needed music.
Sure.
So you had trios and you had quartets. Thank heavens they didn't have an orchestra. I would have had to have that. But the girls' phi-ed was a problem. That, for a place, you know, and furthermore, I didn't know anything about phi-ed. So that was sort of a nightmare.
And you didn't have an adequate gym, evidently.
No.
You were outside when the weather was decent.
Absolutely. Walked. That was the only thing I really knew mm-hmm. about it to have them do. So mm-hmm. I would take them out in the country and then come back watching the clock all the time.
Oh boy. The community itself, were you heavily involved in the community?
Very. Mm-hmm. But we were very accepted. And while a lot of people criticize small communities as being full of gossip, I never felt that they were really gossiping. They were terribly interested in the teachers, mm-hmm. but they were kind. Mm-hmm. And if anything ever happened health-wise or anything else, they were all very helpful. I really never felt that they were malicious in mm-hmm. their gossip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We came and we were out of the community, and we should be sort of a challenge, you know, because we had had opportunities that they hadn't had. And I never found that they were in any way trying to be detrimental.
Mm-hmm. Where did you live?
I rented a room
in
a
somebody's home.
Oh, and it was cold. Oh, it was so cold. And I had, it was a long march. I walked, of course, because there were no cars. The only member of the whole faculty that had a car was the science teacher, who was unattached, fortunately, and filled his car up with all these women. Mm-hmm. And then the married men on the staff had cars, but mm-hmm. none of us. So I walked a good mile every morning to get to where we had breakfast. It was maybe more than a mile. And then walked half that way back to the school. And then again at night.
What was your salary? Do you remember?
Yes, I was well paid compared to a lot. I got $125 a month for 9 months.
For 9 months. So that was a little over $1,000 for the year then.
So if my parents hadn't supported me in the summer, I would have been right out there on Skid Row.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did did you get integrated into the community as far as the social activities are concerned?
Bill, that's where I learned to dance.
Oh, I couldn't do it at Gustavus Adolphus.
Oh, no, you couldn't. So I picked my sin, and that was yes. dancing. And that's a Finnish community. And mm-hmm. so they would have dances in town, and the community had no kind of restriction on teachers in dancing.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have liked it if you left for a weekend.
You were supposed to make your home there,
that's
period.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But the Finnish people were very accepting, and we would go to dances. We went roller skating at Park Rapids, I remember. And they were very socially inclined. I think we did have to sort of mind our P's and Q's. One thing that I think is very interesting is that our greatest chance for recreation was to go out and walk around the section after school. And I was one of the few women who didn't smoke, so I always carried the package of cigarettes because they said nobody would ever suspect you would smoke. And I didn't, so I carried the loot on me.
But that would have been frowned upon.
Oh, that would have been terrible. Mm-hmm. And I know that...
For the women or for women?
For the women.
For the women. Mm-hmm.
The men, it wouldn't have made that much difference. Mm-hmm. And for the women to have beer in a beer parlor would have been frowned upon dreadfully. Mm-hmm. The men could go into the beer parlor, mm-hmm. but not the women. And several would go, if we got as far as Wadena, they would look to see who was around, but they'd slip in and have a beer. Mm-hmm. I didn't like beer, so it was no problem as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. As you think about, you kind of have an early career and a late career, really,
right.
as far as education. Let's think about the early career first as to as some of these topics. For example, the public attitude towards education and the kind of priorities that education enjoyed.
Well, in Sabika, education was not high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Those students that really were outstanding were likely to go on someplace, but not with a great deal of family support.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that important. And
most of the students ended up just going back on the farm?
Right.
Or, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Became housewives.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
that was accepted.
Yeah.
Very few that actually ventured out at that time. But then after 3 years when I went to St. James, then things were completely reversed because, boy, that was a stronghold of education.
Mm. So the communities really could vary.
Oh,
that.
Decidedly.
Yeah.
But the community at St. James, now that's south of St. Peter and Mankato.
Mm-hmm.
So the area was different. The people in Sabika were Finnish by background.
Mm-hmm.
The soil was poor. There was not affluence.
Mm-hmm.
In St. James, that was primarily a farming community where the land was good.
Yeah.
There were a lot of well-educated people, mm-hmm. very well-educated.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, really, truly, I was hired with the understanding that the Latin classes, which had not been passing state boards, I was to see that that was raised.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they were
them,
concerned about the quality.
Absolutely. And see, the rest of the school was doing well, but that subject, which had involved bright youngsters, was not doing well. Mm-hmm. And so the superintendent talked to me very frankly about the fact that he expected those grades to go up.
Mm-hmm. And were you successful?
They went up.
They went up. Or else, huh?
Right. I wouldn't have lost my job, but he would have been very disappointed.
Sure.
And he was an excellent administrator.
Let's talk about the relationship between a teacher and administrator in those days.
He was the Lord and Master. Mm-hmm. You didn't question. I can remember a few incidents at Sabika, and he was able. There was no doubt about that. But I would have questioned his judgment on several things. He was very rigid, mm-hmm. exceedingly rigid. And I think there, his social mores were too restrictive, really.
Kind of out of touch as far
right.
as...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In St. James, he was equally high in his ideals, but he was living in realism instead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, they never checked on how much we went home weekends mm-hmm. or left the city weekends. And he was not as likely to feel that it was your obligation to be involved as heavily in the community. He was far more interested in the fact that we went on and did more with our own education
mm-hmm.
outside of the school year.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where did
I
you
went
take
to the University of Wisconsin at mm-hmm. that time. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Took more Latin, took
Summers.
More library. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I still had my salary of $125 a month.
Oh, so you got into a better school system, but it didn't do much for you as far as
not finance.
Money. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. The was there an expectation that all students would take Latin? Or?
No. It was always sort of restricted to the better student
mm-hmm.
until I'd been here a while in Moorhead and hoped that the average student would take Latin because that person would benefit tremendously from having
mm-hmm.
that background.
Mm-hmm. What was your typical course load? What was your schedule like back in those days?
You never had a vacant period, let me
no
tell you.
No vacant period.
Absolutely.
So you start,
not.
The school would start what time in the morning?
Well, we would have to be there normally around 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And the school day, well, in Sabika, by the time that I would be through, I suppose it would be 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with all those preparations, you never had to worry about recreation because you didn't have any time for it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I had 3 histories and social studies,
oh yeah,
you know, with all the reading that
yeah.
you needed to do.
Yeah.
But at St. James, it was somewhat different because I had library.
Mm-hmm.
I taught 3 hours a day and had library the rest of the time. So if the library weren't full, even though there would be a lot of physical care, you know, ordering books, accessioning books,
sure.
checking shelves and all of that, because you didn't use students as much. They were expected to use their study periods for studying,
mm-hmm.
and they really did.
Mm-hmm.
You expected more of the student. And so a lot of the mechanical things with books I had to do, too. But it did free me so that I could do more preparation as far as Latin 1 and 2 would be concerned.
It's interesting what you expected of students. What expectations as far as homework did you levy, and did you find this changed during the course of the years?
It changed a lot. When I was even first in Moorhead, you could easily expect a student to do an hour's homework.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they advanced. But I'm not even so worried about the advancement as the fact that they had a far better basic background.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you would have them really trying to ferret out information on their own, and if they didn't get it, they'd come and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents expected that they were going to be prepared. And especially at St. James, where they expected them to raise that state board
sure.
system, you know,
the students
pressure
were
on
trial to some extent, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, as time went on, you know, after the 60s, for instance, then the parents were more eager that kids like school than if they learned in school. You became more of a babysitter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Keep them happy, keep them occupied, and nobody really was so terribly concerned about whether they were really getting an education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of people, especially in those years when we were monkeying around with modular scheduling, who came out with a horrible lack of basic knowledge.
The modular scheduling, how did that impact on the typical student's experience?
If they were bright, they could handle that.
Mm-hmm.
The average student was not capable of using his time wisely. And they spent 90 minutes going from class to class during a whole day.
Mm.
We had 15 mods. 5 minutes of passing time was 75 minutes just wandering around in the halls.
Hmm. I guess I don't even understand how that works. How did the modular system work? I mean, okay, you had 15 mods. What size was a module?
Usually 20 minutes.
So that it's conceivable that you could have had how many different 20-minute assignments for a student?
Now? It was a nightmare. I never did figure out how many times I would see the same child in a day. Some days, maybe I would have that person, depending on the mods, back to back. And then that was wonderful. If the rest of them had been in that same situation, because mm-hmm. then you'd have 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But if part of the class had been in another class, and then you got them mixed in with the ones that were there the first mod.
Then what did you do with the ones that you'd already given this particular lesson to?
This was the whole problem.
Sure. Well, what was the objective of this modular system anyway?
They felt that if you had mods, that the child's attention span would maybe be not more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree to that. Junior high school students, if you have a concentration span of 20 minutes, that's pretty good. But then if you can keep them another 20 minutes with directed study and you're there to help them,
mm-hmm.
then you've got a learning process in which you're reinforcing what you've done the first 20 minutes.
Sure.
But the idea was that they would never be bored, and they would like it, and therefore, they would put forth their best effort.
Mm.
Well, even adults aren't always too thrilled about an education, so they're just going to lap it up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was a tragedy.
When was this instituted?
It was in the 70s, I wonder if it could have been maybe 70 to 73 or 72 to 75.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was done away with because they realized that it had not been a fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
Then also think of the number of teachers that had to be hired because you had 15 mods. Well, you needed to double. You almost needed to double the size of the faculty in that school.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to visualize. Now, how many mods were actual classroom experiences for the student, and how many were study hall? Did they?
I don't remember how many study halls I had. But you see, if you were lucky enough to have your own students in a study hall, that was one thing. But if you got mods in which you had other students from other classes, you could be of no help.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know these youngsters. They could have been 7th through 9th. And if you did have extra mods again, you were very likely in the assembly hall where all of these kids would come who weren't really involved in some particular class.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were teaching when they moved into the new high school, I guess, then, weren't you?
In the new high school, and I was teaching when the new junior highs opened up. Mm-hmm. Because in my first experience here, I taught at what was then Central Junior High, where Hornbacher's now stands.
Mm-hmm.
That had a magnificent library. It mm-hmm. was beautiful. And then that was superseded by the two North and South Junior Highs. And there was a time when I was teaching in all three junior highs.
Mm-hmm.
I drove from one building to the next building.
That must have been interesting.
Well, let me tell you, it was a wearing experience.
Yes, yes.
Because you never had really the time. And there was even a time when senior high opened when I had no lunch break.
Mm.
I taught on my lunch break, and I took a sandwich from home in the morning and ate it in the car as I drove from South Junior High to Senior High.
Oh, my.
That was my lunch break.
Hmm. Did you, as far as student receptivity and student willingness to work, you've said that that seemed to be much less the further along you went in your career. That particularly in the 70s, was this the case?
Well, I think maybe that I did not suffer that as much as most other teachers.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they elected my class.
So you had a really kind of a cream of the crop.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there was that underlying factor that it was more important excuse me. It was more important for a person to get into college with a good grade.
Mm-hmm.
And if then Latin was going to be difficult, maybe they should take something that would be easier.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, then, that made you aware that if you wanted to keep that student and you wanted him to have the experience of a foreign language, you had to make that class so attractive that he was going to come back in spite of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Even though he or she is going to have to work harder than a lot of other classes.
That's right.
Yeah. You know.
And I think maybe that consciously or subconsciously, you sort of lowered your standards
mm-hmm.
in order to keep the students because mm-hmm. you felt that they were going to gain by it.
Mm-hmm. It's a real challenge in that environment then to
mm-hmm.
teach.
And I think that the country as a whole sort of went through that where the student was asked, what would you like in the curriculum, as though they would know what the needs of the future were going to be. And they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of us knew? Furthermore, that was the time, too, when the student was supposed to rate the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how ridiculous that is. Why would you elect a class if you didn't think the teacher was adequate?
Mm-hmm.
I said that to the principal. I said, I feel this is a terribly unsatisfactory kind of thing. Of course they're going to rate me high. They don't know me from a hole in the ground as far as teacher is concerned, because what other Latin teacher is there?
Mm-hmm.
None. There was no comparison to be made. And they didn't know whether I really had a basic knowledge of Latin.
Mm-hmm.
They assumed I did, but
this kind of leads us into some of the things that from outside education that had possibly an impact on education. You, of course, started teaching the Depression, and obviously mm-hmm. that had an impact on your salary, if nothing else.
Absolutely.
Were you aware of other things that that influenced education just simply because you were in a Depression era?
I think that I was much more aware then of the economic differences. Even though everyone felt the depression, I could never remember that in my own life, my father did not lose his business.
Mm-hmm.
He lost in bank failures. But we always had adequate clothing. We always still continued to have that car, or a newer car, of course. We always had plenty of food, though I do remember in the Depression that farmers who owed my father huge bills would bring in a dozen eggs or a sack of potatoes or things, and my father very meticulously kept records of that as against that big bill.
Mm-hmm.
But we never knew what it was like to be hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I did realize that when I got out teaching, there were children who should have had dental care that weren't getting it, that never had any spare money, which didn't bother me because on our salaries we didn't have spare money either. But there were so many areas in which there was absolutely nothing of any cultural mm-hmm. impact.
So this nowadays when a student is asked to bring 50 cents so they can go to the planetarium or go to the children's theater or whatever, that wouldn't have been possible in those days.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have been possible at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember what a great event it was in the life of my girls' sextet when they were able to go to a competition, a district competition, and they got out of town even. And it was no cost to them, but it was a thrill of a lifetime for many mm-hmm. of them just mm-hmm. to get that far.
Mm-hmm. How about, now you weren't teaching during World War II, I guess.
No, but an interesting incident. My husband was in service, and mm-hmm. He had a business and math background. And because all the men were drawn into service, they came and offered me my husband's job at more money than they paid him. I was irate. And, of course, I couldn't accept it because I was pregnant and you weren't allowed to teach if you were pregnant.
Oh, that was impossible. Is that
oh,
right?
Absolutely impossible.
That would have affected your teaching?
It would have made me not know my subject matter. Absolutely. And when I returned to teaching after that interval, boy, the one thing that I fought for in the Western Division, but then I was sent as a representative to the state for a number of years, I fought for women's salaries and being on contract because I was not on contract in, I don't think, any of the time that my husband lived. He died in 66, and I taught full-time from 63. I was never on contract.
Does that mean that you did not qualify for retirement benefits during that time? In other words, you not being on contract, you got no fringe benefits, for example?
Well, I didn't get fringe benefits, though it did count for Social Security, and mm-hmm. I could repay that in pension plan later.
Mm-hmm.
But I never knew until the day before school started whether I would be hired.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so that you were an occasional, supposedly an occasional employee.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether I was really on the salary schedule, but you didn't make any ripples because I wanted to teach
mm-hmm.
and I needed to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't until I became president of the local MEA and then worked into division and then the state
mm-hmm.
that I fought for contracts for married women.
Well, that was the reason, supposedly, that you didn't have a contract?
I was a married woman whose husband was on the staff.
I see. And so the only justification for hiring you as a married woman was that it was an emergency, a
right.
last-minute emergency. I see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you were involved in the MEA, and that, were you ever involved in collective bargaining then?
No, but I was the faculty representative with the school board in mm-hmm. which I really fought for the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that very decidedly because that was the first year that Dr. Nettleton was here. And there was going to be no raise in the salary schedule. And I felt that it was unfair for the teachers to have to take the burden of taxation. And it always has been a point, really sore point with me, when my friends have said, well, we would like to see your salary increased because you are a good teacher. But they don't want to see anybody's salary increased when they talk to you like that, and you know it.
Yeah. So, actually, there was no formal collective bargaining then. There was a professional association, the MEA, and you were active in that.
Right.
At both the local and the state level.
Uh-huh.
And but without collective bargaining, all you could do is develop positions and convey those positions to the board and
That's
hope
it.
They would listen.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about Sputnik? You were teaching when Sputnik came through, too, didn't you?
Well, you know, so many of those things are sort of interesting. You know that so many events were supposed to have great impact. I was thinking especially of the fact that when TV came, the schools were wired so you could have TV and be an up-to-date teacher. Well, that was certainly a lovely dream that availed nothing. And I think the things that sometimes surprised me were things such as the walk on the moon and all of that, that was so taken for granted instead of being a source of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to my classes often, when people would come and you'd know what the discussion at home was, that much too much money was being spent. And I would say, you can't harness men's minds. You'll never be able to stop the space program. Mm-hmm. It would have been like putting Christopher Columbus back in Italy
in
or Spain,
robot, huh?
Right? And I found that that was a very thrilling, exciting, and imaginative thing to bring to date, even in a classical language, and the study of that period,
mm-hmm.
how man has always superseded because of the ability of his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. Somebody is always going to have that dream, and that dream will be fulfilled, come what may.
Well, that there are some of those dreams that weren't so happy, however. I'm thinking of one of the more negative ones, where we had a time of McCarthyism, where there was a real concern about the loyalty of teachers and real concern about the communist threat, and I guess a kind of stultification of man's imagination and intellectual freedom at that point. Were you conscious of that at all?
Yeah, I was very conscious of that because I still feel that when that phrase was coined, the only the thing we have to fear is fear itself,
mm-hmm.
that was such a truth.
Mm-hmm.
But that people so abused anyone who dared to have a different thought. And I still think that today. I'm not so sure that democracy is the right government for everyone. That there are places in which communism is the right way to go. And that we fear that because we don't want to think about it, mm-hmm. that we could possibly be wrong,
mm-hmm.
and others could be right. And, of course, the fact, I think, the sad part of McCarthy was that instead of really investigating thoroughly, people took his word for it. Mm-hmm. And such a hullabaloo existed that really damaged a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just awful.
Yeah.
It was like in the early days when any new scientific evidence came up, that person was immediately treated as a heretic by the church, by society, and all of that. And then following generations or centuries proved him to be right. Well, mm-hmm. McCarthy, I felt, was sad, sad commentary.
Yeah.
And I used to try to point out to my classes, you know, where you would have had statesmen among the Roman people who were really fine people, and then those that did a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so equivalent to McCarthy.
Right.
And new thoughts of government as well.
Let's talk about discipline. That's one thing that, as a new teacher, you're very, very conscious of, and I suspect that even after you taught for a while, though maybe not with the kind of selective classes that you had, but was that difficult for you? And
in the first years, it was never difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Even though students were my own age, a teacher was something that the whole community respected,
mm-hmm.
and the student was expected also mm-hmm. to respect that person. And I do remember at St. James that I had a student who was a football player and was failing in my subject. And I wouldn't change his grade to make it possible for him to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach came to me and pleaded with me, and I said, absolutely not. There would be no way I would pass Glenn in order to make it possible for him to play football. And I don't think that the whole community ever wondered about that kind of decision.
Mm-hmm.
I did find that as time went on, I never had a problem in my classes because they were elected. But when I had, I never had a problem in my classes because they were elected. But when I had homeroom and some of the students from other classes, I was afraid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even in Moorhead. I can remember mm-hmm. going down the corridor in Moorhead, 1975, and taking a knife away from a seventh grade student who called me every name under the sun, which never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered what would have happened if I hadn't been strong enough to physically remove that knife.
Yeah. Did you, you know, when, in the 30s, when I was in school, it was very common for a student, at least in the little school I had, to slap a student, for example, if they were misbehaving. Was that the case in your early teaching experience?
I never had to slap anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the difference, the respect with which they...
Mm-hmm.